Senate Jobs Economic Growth Committee call the committee to order. A quorum is present.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning, Senator Daley.
Morning, Bill.
Morning, Senator Mattson.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
So, members, we have, I don't know if it's a combination bill or a hybrid bill, but we've got Senator Rosen and the rookie, maybe the rookie of the year, Senator Hayden, who are kind of going to do a combination presentation. They each have a bill on the same topic. I know there's an amendment that will move on Senator Rosen's bill, but so I'll just turn it to you at least to start things. And I know we have several folks who want to testify. I want to be able to do this looking at the clock in roughly half an hour on this bill, if we can hold to that. So, Senator Rosen, welcome to the Jobs Committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, it's really great to be in front of your committee with you members, too. And you said exactly right. Senate File 2248 is the Jobs Innovation for Hard-to-Employ Minnesotans Grant Program. And Senator Hayden also has Senate File 2525, which is basically the completion of this demonstration for high-risk adults. And this bill and this Delete All Everything amendment takes it down to $1.1 million appropriation for this five-year demonstration project that we kicked off in 2007. And it's for the last 12 to 18 months that we need to get. These are for gentlemen that are leaving the prison system. They have no skills, no job, no place to live. And we are providing a better solution for them. And what's really neat about this, Mr. Chair and members, is that this is exactly what government should be about, is results and accountability in the end. You look at these individuals and we want to put them back into society. You want them engaged with their families. You want them employed and be able to retain a job, but they have some issues, and this program definitely deals is specifically for these issues going forward. So first, why does the network differ from other endeavors? And that's first because we create a real employment opportunity for them. And second, we provide a complete set of support so they have and they can show success on the job. And third, there's accountability for the investment that the state has put forward, and they have accountability measures going forward. We actually met with the governor on this, and it was a very good bipartisan group that met. Senator Hayden was there, Senator Higgins, and Senator Perry, who I thought maybe he would show up today too, but he actually took a tour of this the network and came off very, very impressed. So we started with, a $3 million appropriation. The governor has supported it to $1.1 million. That is what the amendment is for. That will get us through the 5 years. We put 4 years of investment into this program, and we'd like to see this thing completed because there are some real results here. And as you know, Mr. Chair and maybe members, we have been pushing this for the last couple of years. It's pay for performance or outcome. What do we get for our money? And this is a perfect example of what we've like to see how government runs. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I appreciate being here with this illustrious and esteemed group of legislators. First of all, I'd like to just say once again, thank you for hearing the bill. We do have a lot of testifiers today, and we're going to really the particulars of the bill, and I know you'll want to know a little more about the return on investment and kind of how it's set up with the philanthropic dollars, government dollars, as well as the actual enterprise, which is what I think is interesting. One of the things that I think that we see often when people make a poor choice, quite frankly, and have to go to the community corrections department, go into the criminal institution, is when they come out, there often isn't a place for them to go. There isn't a place for them to live. There isn't a new kind of set of people around them that are supportive so that they don't go back to the old behavior. And more than anything else, they don't have a way in which to make money. And so I know that this is the Jobs Committee. We know that we've gone through a very hard time economically where we've had an unprecedented amount of people lose their jobs. And at the bottom of that food chain are folks that have been in the criminal justice system. We all know if we're an employer and we're looking for new people and there is a big group of people out there, typically someone who has a felony is not doesn't rise to the top of the list. So this is a very innovative solution in which the Network for Better Futures has provided temporary housing to get folks on their feet. They provided a support network and peer group to kind of get them and get them in to start to think about their lives differently and also to kind of be around a different crowd, quite frankly. And then also they have a group of work teams, if you will, that go out and work crews, and then they work. And they do really, really tough work. They do deconstruction. They do a lot of things that a lot of us probably wouldn't like to do, but they do it with pride. They get paid. They're able to start to pay back their families. They're able to start to actually pay their child support. They actually start to integrate back into society. And often because of the great work that they do, employers now are looking at them. And we've had a lot of conversation around here about ban the box and how do we do this kind of work in which employers can take a look at people based on their work ethic and what skills that they present, and then kind of make a determination at the end when they have a criminal background. Well, this does a similar kind of situation in which when you see somebody work awfully hard and do this backbreaking work, you often have a chance to maybe hire them because they've proven themselves. And so we have some of the men here that are sitting back in the T-shirts behind us. I think we'll have a couple that will really talk about their life and how it's been transformed. But Mr. Chair and members, I think that this is a great opportunity. As Senator Rosen said, we have invested in them over the last 4 years. As some of the members of the network will tell you, there is a strong evaluation component. So this really rounds out the ability for them to come back to us and say where every dollar went, what the return on the investment was, what the performance of the individuals that did it, in order to look moving forward to see if this is something we need to invest in. Unfortunately, we have a revolving door in our criminal correction system where people come out, they don't do well, and they go back, and that cost us a lot of money. It cost the neighborhoods and communities a lot of money for the crimes that may be committed, and frankly, to the bottom line, even though I know it's not in your jurisdiction, it cost us a lot of money to take care of people that are not productive. And so really, this is a bill that is about government innovation. This really is about reform. This really is kind of starting to move the needle forward to make sure that we put these men back on track. I will leave with this. There has been a lot of talk in education and other committees about the achievement gap. And one of the things that we've talked about teachers and other things, but what we haven't probably talked as much about is the family and the family structure. And that people need to have kind of a mother and a father involved in their lives that are productive, and that the children actually follow that. This allows these men to reintegrate in their families. It allows them to be able to pay their child support. It allows them to reconnect with their children. It saves us money in our human service department. And once again, I won't go so far because it's not in our jurisdiction, but for your thought process for jobs and economic development, it really puts people back to work. So with that, we can go to our next testifier.
Thank you, Senator Hayden. Now, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All the committee staff just left, so let's just go ahead and pass them back. Actually, let's hear first let's hear the deed perspective on this legislation briefly, and then we'll get to some more testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Paul Moe, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Thank you, Mr.
We're here
Moe.
In support of this concept. The governor is requesting one-time funding of $1.1 million to complete the demonstration pilot operated by the Network for Better Futures. This pilot is the type of reform that we support because it's one of those few endeavors in the state where we're creating jobs for a group of chronically unemployed men who are costly and frequent users of state services. Under this demonstration, the network has employed over 290 different chronically unemployed men during the past 4 years, and with this continued funding, will create opportunities for 200 chronically unemployed at-risk men who have the opportunity to work. Just as important, this demonstration is building a new model of success that sets high expectations, holds people accountable, and helps break a costly cycle of dependency. The preliminary results of this pilot are very encouraging, and the one-time funding requested by the governor will allow us to fully evaluate the results and the cost benefits of this pilot. In addition, by completing the pilot, we further develop effective job development and employment strategies for this at-risk group of workers and learn how we can apply this job creation and cost reduction model more broadly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moe. So I have a number of folks scheduled to testify. So if you could just come forward and either pull up some chairs or members can move around and And Senator Hayden or Senator Rosen, you could join us at the end of the committee table, too, if you want to make room. So I've got Daryl Lindsay from the network. I have Lewis King and Vincent Britton. And I also have Commissioner Mark Stenglein. Commissioner, welcome. So I know that's a lot of bodies, and I will turn to either Senator Rosen or the testifiers themselves just as to what order you would prefer to go.
Mr. Chair, I also do want to point out a letter from Commissioner Jeff Johnson that's in your packets also in total support for this bill, too. And I will move and make more room for people.
You can stay here.
You all right? Okay.
All right. Who? I had Mr. Lindsay first, but that's not necessarily how we have to go here.
Well, Mr. Chair, why don't I go first?
All right. That sounds like a public official.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Stenglein, welcome.
My name is Mark Stenglein. I'm a Hennepin County board member, Hennepin County 2nd District. And first of all, you're welcome for Senator Dietzick. we miss her down at the county.
Mr. Stenglein, I need to correct the record. As much as I like Senator Hayden, I think Senator Dietzick's probably the rookie of the year this year.
Probably.
Well, I would agree with that.
We certainly miss her down at the county, and I know she's certainly a plus here. I represent the 2nd District of Hennepin County, which starts in St. Anthony Village, includes northeast Minneapolis, essentially all of north Minneapolis, Golden Valley, and large parts of Plymouth. And the network falls rests in my district. And, you know, part of government's responsibility, as we talked about earlier, members, is to intervene in the private sector where the private sector can't do it. You know, we do it at the county all the time when we take care of indigent people or when we provide defense and prosecution services. And this is a perfect example of that. You know, the network is dealing with individuals that are difficult. They're coming out of institutions that not a lot of education took place in those institutions, and they're coming into society. And most of them are coming back. And we have to understand that. And to take these individuals and put them back in without any kind of support, nobody in this room would hire them straight out. I wouldn't. None of us would. But if we create opportunities so they can prove themselves to be integral members of society, that's a winner. I always say, you know, in Boy Scouts and everywhere else, I always say the best manual for a little boy to look at is the man standing in front of him. And these men need to come back and be the fathers that they're meant to be. And the next senators and commissioners, too, by the way. So they're coming back into society, and we need to help them come back. I'm joined here by several people who are going to testify, Daryl Lindsay, Lewis King, and I don't know who we're turning it over to now. But, you know, for Jeff Johnson, who's probably arguably the most conservative member of our board, to stand behind this program, allowing, I mean, this crosses party lines, Mr. Chair members. He understands the need for a program like this. So I know you're on a tight timetable, and before the too much staff gets back in, we want to take a vote on this thing. So I'm going to turn it back over. I don't know who's leading this. Lewis, go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner Stenglein. Lewis King?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today on behalf of the Network for Better Futures. I serve as the board chair. I, too, am a former elected official and 10-year Army officer, achieving the rank of major. Discipline is my first name. And that's serious. These men coming into our community, they don't have a place to attach. The people I represent on a day-to-day basis suffer because they get back with the people that they associated with previously, and it creates a lot of pain, and also we pay for it. So we're pleased that the elected officials are joining us in this endeavor. We are a metrics-driven organization. We are not feel-good. This is about productivity. The most exciting part of the initiative for me is the operation that actually goes out and makes money. Finally, I, too, am in the jobs business. I run a vocational school. And as many of you know, we're facing a day when us boomers are going to be out of the workforce, and we don't have time to have folks sit on the sidelines, and we take care of them. Everybody's got to get in the fight, keeping our economy strong and providing workers for the future, and the network does that. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. King, and thank you for your service.
How you doing?
Welcome to the Jobs Committee. If you just state your name for the record.
I'm Vincent Britton, and thank you for having us, Mr. Chair and Committee. I just want to say that I'm here to represent for the men. I, too, am one of the men. I come through the process of a participant to make membership. There was opportunity there to become staff, got hired on as staff, got a chance to pay taxes, become a homeowner, a husband, and a father. I'm just really thankful to have that opportunity. And the network, when I think about the network, I think about the network as being the definition of a second chance, because I really wanted to do something different when I got out of prison. I wanted to be a better person, and it gave me an opportunity to show that. And I just wanted to say that it's a real, real important program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Britton. So now I think we have Mr. Lindsay.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Darrell Lindsay. I serve as the Chief Operating Officer for the Network for Better Futures, and thank you so much for allowing us to testify this morning. I also want to thank Senator Rosen, Senators Perry, Hayden, and Tomasoni, as well as yourself, Senator Michelle, for your support and leadership in this particular legislation. I'll try to make my comments brief because there have been so many who've testified so far. I'm here this morning to encourage you to support Senator Rosen's amendment and the request in Governor Dayton's budget to provide one-time funding for the completion of our innovative demonstration pilot. The network enrolls high-risk men, primarily African-American, who are committed to working and changing their life and lifestyles. We set high expectations and provide the essential opportunities needed to meet these expectations. Safe housing, a job if needed, access to health care and behavioral health care counseling, and a community built around a solid set of values, including mutual respect and personal accountability. Our demonstration was created by the legislature in 2007, and we are focused on documenting ways to reduce state and county spending and break a costly and expensive cycle of dependence on government programs. An essential feature of our pilot and our success to date is that our participants must work. But we also know that some other critical supports must also be available for our participants to find and hold a job over time. Our innovative jobs and worker development approach is based on evidence-based practices, and our results over the past 4 years are very promising. At the end of 2011, we had the following highlights. 520 high-risk men enrolled and served. 88% of active participants were employed. 56% of the men who owed child support made payment, as opposed to 15% if they were not with the network. Part-time employment for over 292 different men, $1.7 million in earned income. And 8% of the participants in the network for 90 days or more returned to prison for a new crime. That's compared to 60% lower recidivism rate than the current status quo. The one-time funding requested in this legislation will enable us to create 16 full-time jobs for high-risk adults, maintain 20 FTE positions, employ more than 200 different at-risk men, offer skills training and a chance to earn certified worker status, secure jobs with private employers and help retain these jobs, access to coaching, health services, and community supports needed to ensure our workers are ready to work and able to hold on to jobs over time, generate $1.4 million in earned revenue, and most importantly, complete our independent evaluation and our formal return on investment. Again, thank you for considering this important piece of legislation, and we look forward to you passing it this morning. Thank you.
Chairman.
Sir Tomasoni, welcome.
Chairman, now that the staff is back, I'll move the bill.
Actually, Senator Tomasoni, why don't we start with, if you'd move the A1.
I'll move the A1.
That is what Senators Hayden and Rosen were hoping to get this into shape with. So, members, I think everyone has the A1, and this more, I think it's fair to say, lines up the two bills that the two members have and also lines it with the numbers that the governor has identified in his supplemental budget. There's certainly anything that involves money still has some more conversation to go, yeah. And Senator Rosen's aware of that. But Senator Tomasoni moves the A1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed nay. A1 is adopted.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing I don't think was mentioned before was the 45% of the private support foundation and individuals that are investing in this program, and I think that ought to be noted. And that's a real decent percentage. I think the 50. So it's almost half from the private foundations and individuals. So I think that's we have to talk about that, or at least mention it this morning.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. And thank you, Senator Metzen, that the public-private partnership partnerships here in this Network for Better Futures is outstanding. You've got Twin Cities Rise, Medica, Family Housing Fund, the Summit Academy, OIC, and other several other chemical dependency dependency treatment facilities that have invested in this. And we've already spent $4 million on this project, matched by a $6 to $7 million from outside funds. So this is, we weren't funded last year. This is the $1.1 million is to finish this project, to get the results, to show the recidivism rates, and it's exactly what I believe state government should be about, is showing results, return on investment, as Senator Hayden said, going forward, but also having the support from the private dollars also.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden, and then I'll go to Senator Nelson. Senator
Hayden. And briefly, this is a nationwide innovative project. So in other words, the work that's being done here, foundations all over the country are looking very closely at it to see if they can replicate it in their state and in their city. And so though the dollars are here and we're doing a good job, it also is the kind of thing that continues to help Minnesota lead the way.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosen, I just want to speak in favor of this bill. It's a great bill. The term network does not escape me. It is a network. It reminds me of Network for Reentry in Rochester, which is a 12-year program, very similar, providing housing, job counselors, financial counselors, one-to-one volunteer involvement. And our recidivism rate, too, has been extremely low. Actually, we've had one recidivate, and that was for parole violation. So I think this very hands-on, providing that stable housing with high expectations and a job and job counseling is so critical. I will tell you, my second term on the board, we were able to add a women's house, and I know that is challenging as well, but that's had great results. And so I just want to encourage you and the group, this really is the way to close that revolving door on recidivism. So go, girl. Go. Good job.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you so much, Senator Nelson. And I do think the numbers speak for themselves. And it truly is a prevention program, really, when you start looking at the investment and the return on the investment going forward.
And Senator Rosen or maybe Mr. Lindsay, I know there's some role model young men who are a part of or have been through your program that are with us today, and I don't know if you want to just point them out or have them stand maybe so the committee can just get an eyeball.
The men you see here in the back are participants, and they are part of the Better Futures work crew. They were willing today to take time out of their work day to come over and be a part of the process.
Great. Thank you, and welcome to the committee, to all of you.
And, Mr. Chair, so it doesn't escape us. The gentleman that spoke actually went through the program, graduated the program, worked at the program, but is now working to help other people at Twin Cities Rise. So he has gone through the whole process and has graduated from that and is now fully kind of on his own, working in society. As he said, he's a new father and a new husband. And so that's the kind of success that we'd like to see out of this program.
And that's Mr. Britt.
That's Mr. Britt.
So we usually don't have audience participation in claps, but I'm going to overlook that for the next
That's good.
Senator Rosen, back to order here. So Senator Nelson moves that Senate File 25, I'm sorry, I want to get this right, Senate File 2248, as amended, be recommended to pass, and this is going to go to the Judiciary Committee. This is a part of the corrections budget, and there's going to have to be some more conversation on that. So on the Nelson motion.
Mr. Chair, hold on a second.
Yep, he called for it.
He did call for it?
He did call
okay.
for it.
All right. Write it in. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
On the Nelson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The bill is passed.
Thank you
very much,
Thank
Senator
you.
Rosen.
Thank
Senator
you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Well, thank you.
For being here, man.
All right.
What's it cost to incarcerate people? 100 grand a year? 90?
Squeaky chair.
You move yours over
that edge.
No.
Let it change.
Maybe they.
On that picture, they're doing
it. Nice mix, so, I don't know.
Thank you very much.
No,
sounds like a program works pretty well.
Well, no, it's not that.
Oh, yeah.
He has sold this thing for
Hey.
Sorry, you need that.
Yeah.
So come up and use it.
Senator Michelle. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The place is cleared out, but I would argue that this bill is equally as significant. Senate File 2396 is kind of the next chapter of a great partnership between the University of Minnesota and Mayo. And so, members, we have the bill in front of us. It's my intent just to spend 10 or 15 minutes on it, give it an informational hearing this morning. It is definitely about jobs. It is definitely a Minnesota success story. And it's kind of one of those you almost want to flip a coin as to who gets to go first, because these two organizations have been such good partners in sharing the credit and partnering and working together. So I'm not sure who's going to win the coin toss, but I have Dr. Wieben down first. I don't know if that's the right way to go. I had a 50-50 chance, and I'm wrong. So we're going to hear first from the U.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Paller. I'm the Senior Associate Dean of the University of Minnesota Medical School and co-director of the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics. My partner here, Dr. Eric Wieben, is the Associate Dean of Research Collaboration at the Mayo Clinic and also co-director of the partnership. The Decade of Discovery in Diabetes is a high-powered collaboration led by our two institutions focused on the goal of preventing, optimally treating, and ultimately curing type 1 and type 2 diabetes. This initiative is a project of the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics, an innovative partnership of research talent and resources founded with the purpose of enhancing and maximizing the research potential of our two world-class institutions. Since its founding, the partnership has been a globally recognized model of research collaboration. The Decade of Discovery is far larger in scope and size than our previous initiatives. Diabetes is a growing epidemic with devastating health and financial impacts. Diabetes costs the state of Minnesota $2 billion each year. The United States needs strong leadership to tackle this problem, and Minnesota can provide it. Our history is filled with accomplishments in diabetes research, and our strengths are innumerable. Strong providers and institutions, a strong public health tradition, active community and patient advocacy organizations, and a supportive biobusiness industry. The Decade of Discovery is joining with and leveraging Minnesota's unique strengths and assets to conquer diabetes. We're engaging partners from across the state, including the Department of Health, ICSI, Minnesota Measures, and many, many others. Together, we are identifying ways to prevent diabetes, serve those with the disease, and ultimately find breakthroughs that will lead to cures. The benefits of achieving our goals are significant and wide-ranging. They include improving public health by transforming the lives of people with diabetes, delivering significant savings to our healthcare system and to our employers by reining in the substantial costs associated with diabetes, and stimulating economic development in our state, creating new businesses and jobs from our research and work that further elevates Minnesota's reputation as a major health center. The state of Minnesota has been a critical partner since the collaboration was established, and the partnership leaders are grateful for the state's commitment. In addition to the annual partnership funding support, we currently have SF-2396 before this committee, authored by Senator Michelle, that would provide $1.5 million specifically for the Decade of Discovery. I'd now like to turn the floor over to Dr. Wieben.
Thank you, Dr. Paler. Dr. Wieben.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Eric Wieben from the Mayo Clinic. Dr. Paler's counterpart on the Mayo Clinic side for this project. Research is at the core of the partnership, and it's one of the pillars on which the decade of discovery is built. Our research efforts are focused not only on the decade of discovery's ultimate goal of curing type 1 and type 2 diabetes, but also driving forward near-term objectives in prevention and treatment. One of the unique aspects of this collaboration between the university and Mayo is the partnering of researchers from different disciplines. Last December, the decade announced funding of three landmark research projects, all with a different focus on making a difference in the lives of people living with diabetes. These projects advance work on the artificial pancreas, develop anti-obesity drugs, and explore immune-based diabetes treatments. As an example, Mayo Clinic diabetes researchers Yogesh Kudva and Anand Basu have joined University of Minnesota electrical and computer engineering professor Stephen Kester in developing a specialized electronic chip that will radically improve glucose monitoring and provide a critical component to the artificial pancreas under development at Mayo. The chip will transmit data wirelessly and function in more locations in the body and last longer than current sensors. Based on a device concept invented at the university, the new sensor will be more reliable, stable, and accurate, and make the artificial pancreas possible. We also have projects in the decade of discovery that are critical first steps in the statewide deployment of best practices in prevention and care of diabetes to improve health care and drive cost savings. One of those projects is the Minnesota Health Atlas, a publicly available online resource that serves as a single destination for data on diabetes and the health of Minnesotans. If we're going to optimally treat and ultimately cure diabetes in Minnesota, we need the tools to help Minnesota researchers and healthcare providers understand areas of need and measure progress. The Atlas's maps, tables, and charts do just this. It's a tool that tells us where to focus our efforts and how well our inventions are working. The second resource created by the Decade of Discovery is a statewide diabetes inventory, which provides a baseline of healthcare and prevention interventions that are now being used across the state. The statewide catalog of activities surrounding diabetes care delivery is a central resource that will foster innovation and collaboration and raise the standards of care received by Minnesotans with diabetes. It'll do this by providing a baseline of care delivery in the state, allowing for measuring improvements, creating the framework for conducting demonstration projects, and identifying collaborative opportunities that encourage information sharing and shared success. The information will ultimately be placed on top of the Atlas, if you will, to provide an excellent population-based foundation. Using these tools to know what we know and provide a baseline for the state will allow us to keep an accurate scorecard for discoveries and improve care as we move forward in the decade. There are a few places in the world that can truly implement these types of foundational tools that will play a vital role in the prevention and treatment of diabetes because of the expertise that exists in this state, the collaborative culture that exists, and the commitment of leaders here. Minnesota is uniquely positioned to effectively utilize these tools for the ultimate benefit of all Minnesotans. Dr. Paller and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Members? Any questions? Senator Kelash. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, it sounds like we're really making progress in the diabetes research and stuff, and some of I'm not sure if you're doing anything because with the wellness side, the what I hear is that folks that have an ongoing relationship with a medical home and have diabetes are doing better in that. Is that some of what you're doing and, you know, talking about ways to make that work? And another question would be on the potential business partnerships and how much outside funding you're getting for helping with that.
Dr. Paller.
Mr. Chair, Senator, what we presented today is really the tip of the iceberg, and it's really just helping to get this initiative started. We'll be back next year. We really see this as a $250 to $300 million project over the decades. We are developing those partnerships. We have a nationally prominent oversight committee to help us. We definitely will be working on the kind of issues that you're speaking about, best practices and best ways to delivery care, testing those, piloting those in Minnesota so that we get advantages, and also things that call attention to Minnesota. So this is the beginning because we need to continue the momentum that we've started to develop by bringing everybody together. But, for example, the formal collaboration with the Department of Health, we have some projects we're already working on, but the big project is in a design stage right now. We had an all-day retreat a couple weeks ago, so we'll all be talking more about that as time goes on.
Senator Hull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, Senator Michelle, does this bill go to higher education or straight to the floor from here? Or are you going to be hauled over for possible inclusion?
Senator Howe, I think we're going to park this right here for a little bit.
All right.
Have some
Thank
further
you.
Discussion and seek opportunity if there are any.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Was there anyone else? Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is for Senator Michelle or for the witnesses. This is the same partnership that we've been funding for several years, right? I think you got $8 million. Each year for 2 years or for several years, correct? Or is it into perpetuity, or what was the number on that?
Dr. Paylor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, it's about $7.5 million right now, and it's in perpetuity unless you change your minds next year.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought.
But this is a new initiative, by the way.
This is a new initiative, and it's for type 1
and 2
diabetes. This
is above and beyond that. We continue to do that. And that work that we've been doing that you've so generously supported is not just on diabetes. It focuses on all the important diseases and is only research. This is, as I said, very different in scope because we're working with providers and payers and State Department of Health, et cetera, as a more comprehensive plan to deal with diabetes. It's a stretch.
And Mr. Chairman, and I realize research takes a real long time, but are we getting results of the partnership that, I mean, I'm sure I'd like to hear some real positive stuff, just a couple of things if you got something for me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, absolutely. And the proposal, the parts that would be funded by this particular bill have been chosen because they're partially along the way, and again, as a way to get this really moving and additional momentum. The artificial pancreas, for example, is something that, you know, in a few years might really be ready to start using or testing more fully in patients. So we have a portfolio and will have a portfolio.
Senator Michelle.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I'd ask that we lay this bill over and move on to Senator Peterson's bill, but appreciate both the university and Mayo's time. And they brought this to us, just in the last couple weeks, but it's got some exciting potential and another chance to talk about a great partnership. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Senator Peterson, ready for you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we have before you Senate File 1653 that relates specifically to some independent contractor provision modifications. I do have a couple amendments I need to offer to get this bill in line with what's gone on in the House, and then a housekeeping change relating to the date. So with that, Mr. Chair, I need to offer the A1 amendment.
Members, you should have the amendments in your packets. So, Senator Peterson, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A1 amendment, as I just stated earlier, the top half of the first page relates specifically to some definitions that were implemented in the House language. And then starting on basically line 1.17, and below, the rest of that amendment relates specifically to Senate file number 780, which is a repeal of a withholding tax for contractors. And that bill was heard in the tax committee just a few weeks ago and was passed out of that committee. Then on the Senate, Mr. Chair, I need to offer the A-12 amendment as well.
Members, we do need to adopt this amendment first. And any discussion? All members in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, the A-12 amendment, which you'll see is just a simple date change.
All right. Members, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill and the combination of these two bills is the result of several weeks of really from folks on from two different perspectives. I think we have agreement now from skilled organized labor as well as skilled, quote unquote, non-union labor relating to these issues. This bill, what it does is it replaces current language concerning the independent contractor exemption certificate with language that makes a worker an independent contractor if the worker is registered by the Department of Labor, and then really another main section of it essentially directs Commissioner Peterson, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor, to implement a pilot project that will start right away this July 1st that asks persons that are performing work to register. And this is simply just to evaluate whether we have the right classification for employees that are working within the construction industry in Minnesota. And we have some folks that are here to testify in favor.
All right. So we're ready for our first testifier.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is John Pagan. I own Roberts Residential Remodeling, located in Burnsville. It's our 32nd year. And I'm here today to discuss this new plan, which would help folks like me who own businesses to be at a more level playing field. Unfortunately, there's a lot of folks that are kind of under the wire in my industry, and as a result, it makes it difficult for companies like mine, a professional organization with employees and a tenure in our community, to do business and be fair with our bids and things of that nature. When we have employees, we have a lot of things that are attached to employees, of course, which requires us to take care of them and make sure they're doing their job, we're doing our job. With respect to subcontractors, of which we do employ those as well, when we take on a new subcontractor, we do have a process in which we will start with their licenses, we'll start with their corporate structure, we'll move on to workers' compensation, liability insurances, vehicle insurances, that is done quarterly with our group of subcontractors regularly. This idea of being able or having to be able to check online to find out if there is some type of registration done on some of these folks versus the ICEC to my office would be no burden at all. In fact, it would just help us make sure that we've got professionals in our clients' homes. So I was asked today about my opinion on it, and I thought it was important that I come here today to let you know that the buyer really relies on me as the general contractor to employ the correct people. And in order to do so, I think that everybody should be registered on the same level of business as us if we're going to be competing together in the same marketplace. Thank you.
Members, questions? All right. Next testifier, Kyle. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kyle Macarios with the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. Mr. Chairman and members, I had the pleasure of serving for 2 years on the state's task force on employee misclassification that at the time Commissioner Swigum led. And it was a great group of state agencies, labor, private sector contractors, commercial construction contractors, residential contractors, general contractors, subcontractors, independent contractors. And we spent 2 years trying to figure out how we can solve a widely acknowledged and very serious problem in the construction industry without putting too much burden on legitimate construction contractors, especially small contractors. And I think that Senator Peterson's bill takes the best recommendations from that task force and puts them into effect and strongly support the bill.
Thank you. Next testifier, Pam Perry. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, members. My name is Pam Perry. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota.
I represent the residential construction industry and those small employers that Kyle had referred to. We are very supportive of this bill, particularly because it repeals the independent contractor exemption certificate process, which we have felt was very cumbersome and very burdensome for small businesses to meet those requirements. The registration is much easier, and I think it'll bring about the compliance that the department would like to see. In addition, Senator Peterson is looking to repeal the 2% contractor withholding provision, which was put in place at the same time that the independent contractor exemption certificate was required by the legislature. Those two items together were quite burdensome. And as a result, a number of independent contractors that were filing as sole proprietors filed as limited liability corporations. As a matter of fact, I think they were close to 8,000 individual companies that or businesses that changed their corporate structure as a result of the law. We certainly don't want to see people not paying taxes. We certainly want to see people, members and builders, complying with the law, and I think this bill meets that objective.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Berry. Next testifier, please.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Phil Raines. I'm with Associated Builders and Contractors. We're the non-union commercial industrial construction companies. We also favor this bill. A little bit mixed. We're worried a little bit about creating a new registration out there. It is only a registration, and it replaces the Independent Contractor Exemption Certificate, the ICEC, which has not had the intended effect that we were looking for. This is a major problem in the industry right now. There's a 40% differential in roofing and framing and drywalling from somebody being an independent contractor to being an employee. So there's a very strong disincentive to actually be legitimate, and it's really become a cancer on our industry. We hope this change will bring the resources to the department so that we can better enforce the existing laws that are out there.
Thank you, Mr. Raines. Any questions for these testifiers?
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not so sure it's a first of all, I think the bill is headed in the right direction, but I'd like the deed to come up. Every time, and I'll say this again, we give an additional assignment to somebody, we add a half a person or a person, and here we go again. We're adding, I think it's $48,000 or $50,000. And I don't know how many employees are in deed, but I just, Mr. Peterson, I'm for your bill, but I just think that, again, I sound like a broken record because I bring this up all the time, but I would think with the amount of people in deed that, and maybe I'll hear from the department, Mr. Dernberger, is it?
Senator Metzen,
tell us why we have to do this and you can't do it with the people you have.
Senator Metzen, I believe you're referring to Dolly.
Dolly.
Yes.
What did I say?
Okay,
Dolly. Excuse
me. Mr. Dernberger?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Charlie Dernberger. I'm with the Department of Labor and Industries Construction Codes and Licensing Division. And to Senator Metzen's question, we're not adding people at the department to administer this registration program. The work that's being done by current investigators on the ICEC program, they will just move into doing registration type investigations as opposed to strictly ICEC. So we're not adding anybody. And the costs of administering the registration itself, which will be done online, is already a part of our ITS budget. So it's basically a net wash to the department.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I'm looking, may I guess I was wrong one time before in this committee, but I'm looking at fiscal year 13 building code fund. We're adding 0.5, which is a half a person. And in FY14, we continue with another half a person. Is that? Do you see that in front of you? And maybe you need the person or a half person, but I just always question when people come before us. We need two more people. We need four more people, and there could be 1,500 people in the department. You know, can we find a way for somebody to do this half-time deal? I'm done.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senators, Mr. Durenberger, I'm sure, has more testimony to offer. But in this process, this question was raised, and I'm not sure in which committee, but in this process, we did confirm that the Department of Labor was willing to absorb this cost that's here because it is a relatively small amount, and the change is something that we have an agreement on, and Mr. Durenberger may have other things to add as well. So.
Thank you. I think that answers my question, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Thank you. Senator Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with what Senator Metzen said, and you know, on the page 3 of 5 here, it says that they can implement the pilot program within the existing budget levels. So I'm wondering if we'd have the Mr. Durenberger testify to that fact that they can accept it into the existing budgets. Is it the plan for this to go to finance or not, if they testify to that?
I think we need a little more from the department, Senator Howell. Is it about Mr. Durenberger on this point?
Mr. Chairman, the intention is not to hire any new people for this program. I think there was a recognition that at 2014, if this program continues, the registration, we're basically going to have to take the staff that were doing the ICEC work and have them do what is now registration work. So we do not intend to hire more people to do this work. We believe we have the staff to do the work under registration based with the people that we have in the ICEC program right now.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think with that testimony saying that there is not going to be an additional cost, it's going to be contained within the budget, I would consider that a revenue-neutral fiscal note, hearing what I heard from the agency.
How are you feeling, Senator Peterson?
Mr. Chair, I feel good.
You sure look good, huh, David?
Grass is starting to turn green, and and you know, it's spring, and there's a lot of construction that's starting to kick up, so I feel good. My intention is to move this bill, Senate File 1653, to general orders. Was my intention this morning. You know, it's important for me to recognize two of the other authors on this bill. You know, were Senator Kielash as well as Senator Tomasoni, which I think were certainly instrumental in bringing agreement together on this issue. So,
all right, Senator Peterson then moves that Senate File 1653 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Peterson and others. Appreciate the work on this bill.
Home, Bill Bailey.
Senate File 2419. Senator William Bailey. Excuse me, Ted Daly.
There's a song like that, I think.
It's great to be in front of you, Mr. Chairman and members. I bring before you Senate File 2419, and there are no author's amendments, so we're in the shape and form we want it to be right at the beginning here. It's a very straightforward and simple bill, and if you take it out, members, you can just look through here, and you'll see that it says a small business advocate office is established in the Bureau of Business Services. In case anyone wonders where that is, that's within Deed. They will provide a one-stop access for small business in need of information or assistance in obtaining or renewing licenses, meeting state regulatory requirements, or resolving disputes with state agencies. And you'll be happy to note, Senator Metzen, this doesn't require a 0.5 or a 0.25 or a 0.3 FTE. They're stepping up to the plate and saying, we can do this.
Good work, Mr. Chairman. Senator Daly.
Senator Daly, do you have anyone that you wish to testify to this bill?
This is so solid, Mr. Chairman.
There
isn't even a need for a testimony.
I understand this, Senator Daly has some support in the other body, which has a group working on small business issues. So that makes sense. Where does this go? Lay it right here. All right.
With enthusiasm, Senator Daley, we will lay this bill over right here. So hearing no objection, Senate Bill 2419 is laid over. Members, we have, I think we just put on notice tomorrow's hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's a couple bills. Thank you, Senator Daley. If anyone has any other bills that they want to make us aware of, I think we've done a pretty good job of juggling the last week here. So with that, members, our work is concluded for the day. Meeting is adjourned.
You like my conservative.
I do.
Awesome.
You did for a Democrat.